Voices Radio Network.
Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Dave, what is happening, man? How you doing?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
Good. I've been practicing my intro in the mirror and while doing cardio all day long, just waiting for that moment. Keep it cool, keep it British, and I think I got it, man. What do you think?
I do. I think that was nicely understated. I really do.
Hey,
well, I've had a day of collecting my own piss.
What?
Yes, don't. I had a renal check this week. Everything's the same, no changes, everything's fine. It's been consistent now for nearly 2 years.
Okay.
But he wanted to run a 24-hour urine sample, which basically means for 24 hours I had to collect everything I peed.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing how much you piss in 24 hours as well.
Yeah, what are we talking here? Like, are we talking a gallon jug, 2 gallon jugs?
We're talking 5 liters.
So 5 liters, I think there's 3 liters in a gallon.
Yeah, so just short of 2 gallons.
That's a lot of liquid, man. That's a lot of liquid.
I had to collect this for 24 hours. Then I had to take it to the doctor's today to drop off.
Okay.
So I turned up at the doctor's surgery, and they've decided they're going to close for a training day.
Oh, geez.
So there's me stood outside with these two big plastic tubs full of piss. Anyway, a workman comes wandering around the corner. I'm like, are you going in there? He went, yeah. And I said, Teddy's in for us, will you, mate? He's like, oh, what am I supposed to do with them? I said, just dump them on counter reception, names on them, they'll know what to do, and leave it at that. And he's like, well, what's in it? I went, you don't want to know. He goes, no, what's in it? I went, it's piss. They just looked at it, put some rubber gloves on, and then take some.
It was very nice of him to even take the jugs. I think I would have ran the other way.
Yeah, well, at least it means they're where they need to be now. So that's the one thing out of the way.
Good. Good to hear.
Excuse me. Not bad. Pretty steady week. Bit busy because I'm trying to get on top of things before I go away on Saturday.
And for the guys people who didn't hear last episode, you are going to an all-inclusive vacation in Turkey, right?
I am, yes. Nice. I'm going to eat myself sick.
Something that I wanted to make sure we brought up here today, right after we recorded the last episode, you told me that there was a guy who was posting, I don't know if it was on a message board or on Facebook or Instagram, whatever the case, you said this guy's like 30 years old and he basically was having a heart attack.
This week, since the last episode, I've had a guy that's been using continuously for 17 years.
Okay.
Initially messaged me saying, I said, how are you feeling? He said, everything's fine. And then when we got into, and this is a bit of a bugbear of mine, when we got into conversation, then he started to let things out. He had water retention and he was tired all the time. He was getting up in the night and pissing all the time. So I've suggested he went and got bloods and had a look and at least look at liver and kidney function and see what was going on.
Okay.
So, but there was definitely some issues going on with him. May not be too severe, but his whole attitude was, well, I don't use a great deal, so I'm fine. I said, well, no, because you've used it for a long time. So, you know, a small poison but used for 10 years is going to be equally damaging as a large amount of poison used for 1 week. There was a 31-year-old guy who was a user who had a heart attack.
Whew, 31.
31. And then there was another guy who was showing severe symptoms of cardiac episode. And then there was another guy who was 21, and I will put my left testicle on. His liver is trying to crawl out of his ass, and he's in heart failure.
I have a feeling that your left testicle isn't really producing much, so even if you lost it, you wouldn't miss it.
Well, I'm still quite attached to the old clubs. They might not be quite as full as they used to be, but
or it's quite attached to you.
Rather keep them than lose them. Thank you.
I believe you had said in one of these cases. Did am I correct? That did you say one of these guys had admitted to steroid use and they turned him away?
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, the one particular guy had sought advice on the forum, and no criticism of the people that are trying to get advice, but some of the advice would actually, in his situation, have been potentially fatal.
Okay.
There was the usual sessions about coming off, going on PCT. One guy suggests getting some decent cardio done. Now, if he is where I think he is, then cardio could potentially have triggered a cardiac episode. So, but at the end of the day, it's just, you know, it's the sort of standard advice that people put out. But then people need to read what people put, because he'd already put he was having extreme difficulty with cardio.
Yeah.
Now, he went to a local hospital and presented himself and explained his symptoms and said he was a user. They checked his blood pressure and sent him home.
Huh.
So now over in the UK, we have a helpline called NHS Direct. Basically, you ring up, you speak to a nurse, you give them the symptoms, they do a medical assessment, and they can either book you in with an emergency doctor, they can book you in with a hospital, or they will call you an ambulance, depending on how they assess. So it's basically like an on-the-phone triage service.
Okay.
So I suggested that he rang them, but this time he withheld the information about using. And this time he got sent to a different hospital, and they've done the various tests. They put him on an ECG and found out he had an AFib, he had an arterial fibrillation in his heart anyway, so his heart's beating irregularly, which is not the best of things. It's not serious, or it has the potential to be, would be a better way of putting it.
Okay.
It can lead to all sorts of complications if ignored, but it's not something that generally is going to drop you dead in the next 24 hours. And then he got tested for heart failure, and he should actually get his results today or tomorrow, which I was quite surprised, because most hospitals will turn bloods around in about 1 to 2 hours.
In a situation like that, right? Because this is...
But it is quite common practice over here that if they feel no one's in immediate danger, they will... Even with stuff like heart failure and those sort of things, they will actually send them home and then treat them as an outpatient.
Okay.
So it's not particularly unusual, but they've done what they've done. It's not ideal, but it isn't too far off what does happen a fair amount of time. But, I mean, the symptoms this guy was presenting were particularly bad. His water retention was that bad he couldn't even make a fist.
Is this the guy who had been using for an extended period of time and initially said he didn't have issues, or is this a totally different person?
This guy had been using 3 years.
Okay.
He was 21 years old.
Oh, this guy. Okay. So 21, 3 years, and this is already happening. I mean, did you, it's scary. This is scary to hear. Was he a guy that was using like high doses, or what do you suspect was the cause of sending him here?
He was using high doses of some drugs. He wasn't using particularly high doses of other drugs. The guy, to be fair to him, just didn't know any better.
Mm.
He'd gone into it to do with a career choice, not particularly to be a bodybuilder or anything else. It was how he earned his living. It was more performance related why he was using. And no one had just given him any information. And probably more unfortunately than not, about 12 months ago, he had blood work done. And it came back that everything was pretty okay. And that sort of seemed to open the gates as to, well, I'm all right to sort of do more then. And his final dose in certain aspects was quite high, but in other aspects was nothing uncommon of what I've seen in numerous people.
Hmm.
I mean, he was touching a total of 2 to 3 grams injectables.
Okay.
I mean, it's a good whack, but come off it. You know, if people were actually honest about what they use, the number of people that are actually on those sort of level of doses is a lot more commonplace than people like to admit.
Sure. But yeah, I mean, 2 to 3 years of use, I feel like, you know, I had a guy asking me earlier, you know, he said, hey, I had mentioned a cycle that I had used, and this was in the past. And I think I said I was on, was using a Grammatest and 200 milligrams of Deca every other day. And he said, do I need to run gear that high in order to get like a good effect? Like, you know, you hear people say like, oh, that's where the magic happens. The magic happens after a gram. It, realistically, it, you know, you can do just fine without that. And if you're starting lower and you, you know, you could get so much out of a lot less. So I feel like, man, 2 grams plus just 3 years into cycling, that you went heavy too quick, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, how long is a piece of string? If you talk to identical people and one was lazy in the gym, then to get the same results, yeah, they would probably look at using more gear. And often a driver for more drug use is poor results. But instead of people analyzing diet or analyzing training, and particularly training seems to be one that everybody ignores, they look to literally up the dose.
Yeah.
And it's like, can you criticize people if the information is not available to them?
Hmm.
You know, at what point, and I've always struggled with this, what point is it, well, yeah, but the lad knew no better, or at what point is it, well, the stupid idiot gets everything he deserves?
Hmm.
And I honestly don't know the answer there. If someone's not had access to information, I mean, the information is out there, but, you know, some people just don't move in the right circles or they get poor information. And I don't believe that this particular guy was actually given information by anybody. So I don't think there's anyone that's pushed him in one direction, because we do get people that suffer with poor advice.
Okay.
And, you know, there are characters out there that popular, I mean, I used a lot of drugs. I like to think I never actually promoted it, and I always stated that it was not ideal or sensible to do what I was doing.
Yeah.
But there are others I know that have been very flamboyant and very positive about very high drug use. And the simple bottom line is that this stuff has risks, and the more you take or the longer you take it for, the greater those risks are going to be. And to me, it's more, you need to learn. We need to educate people. So, because this guy's in a situation now where potentially he could have some long-term health issues that he never knew were possible. And if he had done at an earlier stage, he may not have made the choices he made. And that's unfortunate that we get that with a lot of people, where it's only when it's too late do they actually come to terms with the potential problems that they could cause. And then it's, you know, it's never the drug's fault. I mean, the drugs, and I mean that quite literally, and the drugs never crawl up someone's ass and get into, you know, it's always the person's fault, but people struggle to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And always look for a scapegoat. But at the same time, if they didn't know, and access to that information wasn't easy for them for whatever reason at the time they started, then it's a difficult one as to where you go to blame. I mean, information is out there, but at the same time, I go on forums, and people will be listening saying, well, it's easy to get information. Go online, there's loads of information. There is. And the amount of times I sit on forums and look at wrong information and potentially dangerous information by well-meaning people, and it's easy to get confused and get mixed up.
Yeah, like the guy you mentioned who suggested the person with heart issues did more cardio. You're saying that.
Yeah, and
that
it could was have been a genuine positive comment.
Yeah.
Meaning the best of will. But in this guy's actual situation, it could have been potentially very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I spoke about this a long time ago, that there is a responsibility when you give advice. However nondescript or innocent that advice might seem, you know, if you're giving people advice and you've got to really stand by that to the point that if that advice is wrong, you need to sort of step up and take responsibility there as well. It's great that we share information, but if you're unsure, don't just parrot fashion what you've heard in the room next door, so to speak, because if you don't understand the mechanisms at play and you don't know why it's like that, it may be best that you word your advice in such a way that it is, well, I have heard this, but I don't know why it does it like that. Rather than carte blanche fire, oh, you need to do this. Because there are many, many factors involving quite often in these situations that can cause the same effect. You know, gyno can be caused by estrogen, which is the most common cause, but we've seen, even though medically it's very questioned and medically it's extremely rare, I have seen moderate estrogen levels, elevated prolactin levels, cause gyno and CABA remove that issue.
Really?
But if you look at medical journals, they'll say, oh, no, it's all estrogen, because people with hyperprolactinemia, so very high levels of natural prolactin, don't tend to suffer from gyno unless their estrogen rises. Yeah. But I have seen it happen. So
just with high prolactin, and that's even with estrogen under control.
Yeah. So, and most will say, and the science says that that shouldn't be happening. And I agree. That is what the science says. That shouldn't be happening. But I have seen it. It's not commonplace, but I have seen it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the symptoms that can manifest can be caused by various aspects. You know, erectile dysfunction, high estrogen, low estrogen, low test, high prolactin. There's several causes there.
Yeah.
And people assume it's a certain one, and oh, just take that. What I always like to, you know, go test and find out for real.
Let me ask you something then. A couple questions. I feel like it's rare, but how often do you think that actually happens, where somebody is very sensitive and gets just a prolactin-based gyno? Say they're using Tren, and they're very sensitive to that, even if estrogen isn't at play. I mean, we're talking like very, very small numbers, right?
Generally speaking, yeah, there's a lot of people that will claim it, but in reality, I don't think the number is that great. I've come across it, probably 40, 50 times, maybe.
Okay. And that's out of a lot of people.
Oh, that's out of a lot of people. There will be a lot of people that will report, I took CABA and it went away.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily reinforce that it was a prolactin issue that's now under control, because there's no testing in there where we can see levels up, elevate, drop, and everything else. Then obviously we don't know for sure. So yeah. There's always an element of having to take things with a pinch of salt, and people are particularly bad at not being completely honest with problems. And I find this a lot when you start speaking to people, they then start to open up about, you know, well, I've actually got this problem, and I've actually got that problem, and I've actually got this. Oh, well, hang on. Why didn't you say this in the first place?
Yeah.
I had a very weird one pop up on me this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't remember the medical term, but basically he is hyper-responsive with insulin production.
Hyper-responsive with insulin production. So what was happening to trigger you guys to look into this?
He kept going hypo, but he was on a decent amount of carbs.
Okay.
And we couldn't work out why.
Huh.
And then we start looking into it, and he didn't go hypo on a keto diet.
Okay.
So we were like, hang on a minute. So this has got to be something to do with an insulin response. And it turned out that his meals were quite large. And what was happening was they were causing an overproduction of insulin, which was lowering the BG very, very rapidly and then pushing it too low. Mm-hmm. So we've now spiced his meals out. So he's actually having about 8 meals a day, but they're smaller. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing if that should help manage the situation. And trickle feeding low dose sugars in at times and areas where he's at potentially a higher risk. So like through training, when he's at higher risk, we trickle sugar feed through that.
Do you like to have people in situations where blood sugar is a concern use like a glucometer through the day at all?
No, I don't go too direct unless there's an actual concern of a potential issue.
Yeah.
But I do think that insulin management and blood sugar management is important if you want to get the most out of your growth phases.
Yeah.
I would rather manage my natural insulin levels and maximize them than start looking at using artificial insulin.
Yeah. Is this guy using GH?
No.
Okay. So it's not being affected by something outside of that. Testosterone can have effect on insulin, can't it?
Yeah, it's several factors can. Thyroid function can as well.
Ah, okay.
This is too pronounced. This is quite severe reactions.
Mm.
So the first thing was to spread the carbs out more evenly over more meals. The next thing would be the mild sugar management, which we've also done, and we'll monitor that and monitor his BGs and see where he goes from there. But it's not very common you get that. That's quite rare. Hmm. But it's taken some head scratching this week.
I can tell you, and I'm sure you've experienced it too. You know, with using exogenous insulin or not, going hypoglycemic is a scary feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the more you experience it, the more you learn of when it's coming, and then you can counter it. But
yeah,
he's turns out, because I thought this was a new problem, turns out he's had this problem on and off for over 15 years.
No kidding. I'm kind of like that. I'm super sensitive. I will go hypo very easily. It's all my life. I've had that. It's what's interesting to me is that if I don't eat a lot of food, I'm less likely to go hypo. But the more regularly I eat, my body will just it's more likely to be irregular, I should say.
Yeah. Do you find you get an immediate response behind a large carb meal?
Well, you know, I don't test my blood sugar, but yeah, if I were to eat a large carb meal, which, okay, here's an example. It actually just happened to me. I ate a bunch of carbs, and it was like not super clean yesterday. I took myself out to breakfast, and I ate pancakes, which, you know, I had syrup and stuff with that. My blood sugar, I had a hard time managing it all day long after that. And I wasn't taking any insulin either, just natural blood sugar.
And what was your blood sugar doing?
I'd find that I would begin going hypo. You know, even like several meals down the road, eating clean foods, I just find that, you know, it's a mild hypo where I start feeling, you know, that sweaty feeling and weakness and, you know, like just a little bit scattered feeling. And then I'll eat some food and it comes back. But it's almost like I set myself up for it by eating those pancakes in the morning.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds very, very similar, to be honest.
Yeah. Is this guy, how would you describe his body type? Does he tend to be more of like the ecto or the endo or mesomorphic? What do you think about
him? He naturally pre-positioned to a high body fat level.
Oh, okay.
And we were, obviously, one of the things we're trying to do is get that under control.
Yeah.
And he was fine when we ran we did a keto phase, and he was really, really good on that. And then when we introduced carbs, because of his work schedule, we'd kept it on bigger meals rather than more meals.
Yeah.
And the problem just started to worsen. Mm. So the initial reaction was to up food.
Okay.
Because you're like, well, if you're going hypo, then you must be running out of carbs.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case. So it was like, well, no, because you're in such a situation now with calories where you're just going to start gaining fat.
Yeah.
So it's not the lack of carbs that's causing you to go hyper. So it must be around the timing of carbs. And then when we started looking into it more and we started playing around with meals and monitoring his BG, we found that there was a more adverse reaction the higher the number of carbs that was consumed in a meal.
Interesting.
And actually, what I thought that using fast actors would cause him more problems, as long as the fast acting carbs were at a low level, they actually helped the situation.
That's weird. I wouldn't have thought that.
And that's when we started digging into this overproduction of insulin. And it's a bit like when the signal is made for the pancreas to produce insulin, it gets carried away.
Yeah.
And as a result, it brings blood sugars down quite quickly, deals with the carbs in the meal, we do it, but then carries on going. So the insulin spike is a lot higher than it should be. So the only way to combat that is to then run a low level of sugars in between meals or space meals out very, very, you know, small meals or much more often, so that as the insulin spike starts to become negative in the sense that it starts to drive BG too low, we've got another load of food and sugars coming in that is going to pick everything back up and equalize it back out.
I've got a question for you here. Have you tried incorporating fats at all? Because I found in situations like that, that if I've added fats, because I've seen it happen. I'm thinking of one guy in particular, and he's not the only one. But
it is one of the suggested ways of helping to manage the problem, because there isn't a medicinal treatment as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, I found with one guy in particular that no matter how many carbs, we could use high carbs. No matter what, though, he would find that he would eat meal one, go and train, and then during his cardio begin to go hypo. If we added fats to it just to slow that down, it seems he maintained better. But we tried to go into a fat loss phase recently, and we pulled those fats out. And what happened? He went right back to it again after a year plus of not having the issue.
That's going to be my next step. If we don't get success in the way we are doing it, then we will look at reducing carbs and increasing fats and slowing the process down that way. I'm not wanting to run fats too high just simply because of the current level of body fat he does already carry.
Yeah.
That will be the next step. If this one isn't successful, is we'll look at starting to do something along those lines as well. But it would appear that it's just a condition that there's not much you can do apart from regulating your diet to control it.
Yeah. So speaking of all this medical stuff, speaking of insulin and then just blood work in general, last episode, I think it was, you mentioned that you were connecting with a service where you will actually help people and consult with them on the lab work that they get. Has that started to, are you doing that now? Has that job begun?
Okay. This week, first couple of reports have come through.
Oh, nice.
I've actually got one sat in front of me now that I need to get done today.
What's the name of that company?
That's Youth Revisited.
Remind me, what are they?
They provide blood testing.
Okay.
But they also have their own GPs and they have their own pharmacy. So they offer private prescription service for stuff like TRT and a few other medications and a blood testing service. And now they offer a hormone support, user support service, which is where I come into things.
Okay.
That's early days, but they're starting to come through. Quite a bit of work getting everything done at the moment to get it up and running and get all the information together. Because the problem is at the moment, obviously, I get a blood test through and there might be 40 tests on a blood test. So I have to go through and write out an explanation of what every element of that blood test means, what it's for, what it does, and what the ranges mean. Well, once I've got that done, I can pull and copy and paste to a degree the explanations, because I don't need to then retype the explanation of what that test is for each time. I just need to analyze the results and give suggestions as to why or what is causing the results to go that way.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, anything that's a little bit just out of range, you can give the common ones. You know, when you've got stuff like urea and sodium, potassium, possibly out of range, the first thing you look at is potential dehydration. But anything that looks a bit more worrying, it'll be seek medical advice or refer back to GP.
Okay. Yeah, that makes total sense. You'll have, Just more of a general user's experience too, in your own life, and being able to help these guys when they are, using anabolics that have to. I mean, as much as I'd like to think that a doctor would be able to know all the ins and outs of that, I feel like the medical community is a little behind on it.
They're just not trained in it. You know, it's as simple as that. I mean, a doctor, a general practitioner is exactly what the name says. They are a general practitioner. They are a DIY of the medical community. You know, they're not job man. They've got a basic understanding of lots of little bits, but then they refer to specialists if it's beyond, their scope of knowledge. And unfortunately, when it comes to recreational use of steroids, it's just something that they're not, it's not in the training. And generally, the hormonal stuff, they'll set the tests up and then just refer to endocrinology for anything to be dealt with after that. But they're limited as well because they can't suggest certain routes and practices and certain medications because they would be in breach of the medical licenses. Now, the good thing about this is that there is the option for the customer to contact me privately. So, if, and I'm quite sort of blunt with the sponsors in that I'll put, if you are using exogenous this, that, and the other, or whatever, this could be the driving factors behind what's causing this. And then they have the option, if they want, to take a private consult with me. Well, that starts to do away with the medical practice thing because it's just me and them as a private discussion. So we can then talk more openly, and I can talk more freely about what they've done and what the potential issues are and what their options are. I'm very careful of where I go with things in the sense of I'm not going to sit there and go, well, you must take this, and this. You know, it's more a case of, well, look, commonly in these situations, what users will do is take this, and this, and this is why they take it, and this is what it does. So the option is up to you at the end of the day if you want to try that. But by all means, you can go to your GP and explain to your GP that you've done this, and this. This is what's causing this. This is what you've currently got, and here are the blood results to support it. And see, where you go from there. So, because these days it's an absolute minefield with legal liabilities and stuff.
Oh,
So,
I bet. I bet.
and at the end of the day, I'm not a qualified doctor, and though I have a decent amount of experience, I'm far from an expert in a lot of this stuff. So it's very much a case of, look, here's just an understanding and a basic overview of what's going on in the sense of what these tests mean and how they work and what they do. Here is a range of indications of what this problem could be. If you want further medical advice, contact a GP.
I like it. I think that's a great plan.
And some of them are quite simple. I mean, I have a couple that are just hormone tests, and it's just testosterone, and they've got a level, and they've got a range, and they just don't understand what that level is in relation to that range. I mean, that's quite simple stuff because you can just send them back the age-related test average scale. So it'll show you the testosterone levels on average in each age range. So they can then say, well, I'm 48. This is my test level, and yeah, that's roughly and very close to the average of people my age of what their test levels are. Or I'm above or I'm below, and then they can decide where they want to go from there if they want to take things further.
Hey, over there in the UK, from what I understand, you guys aren't as progressive with like the HRT clinics and stuff. Because here, if you could still be in the normal range, and you might have doctors that say, "Well, we're going to bump you up, to get you in the optimal levels of testosterone." Do they do that over there, or do you have to actually test below in order to
No.
get on HRT?
The youth revisited is probably one of a group of about four or five private prescription services that are possibly a little bit easier to get medication from in the sense of TRT. But I mean, our standard range TRT is obviously we measure in mmol, not in NGDL. And it's 7 point, it used to be higher. They're now quoting it as 7.6 to 31.4. It used to be about 8.3 or 8.2. They're creeping the low end down. which means more and more people that are very symptomatic of low tests are still sitting in range, and most will turn you away if you still sit in range.
Okay, that's so, what I thought. That's what the traditional doctors will do here.
If you go to a GP, say, I mean, this, like I say, so say you're running off this 7.6 scale, and you go to a GP, and you have blood done in the afternoon, and it's 7.1. They'll then say, right, come back in the morning fasted, and they'll do bloods in the morning fasted, and if it comes back at 7.7, they'll go, you're in range, bugger off.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is at certain points. I've even known, I knew a lad, his test level was 3.2. And he particularly stood out because he'd messed himself up with triptorelin. And his GP said, come back in a year.
In a year.
And see how you are then.
Yeah, it's just hold on for a year. That's all.
Yeah, at 3.2, can you imagine how shitty he felt?
Oh, terrible. What did he do?
I don't know. He didn't stay in contact, but his intention was just to self-administrate.
Yeah. I mean, what else are your options if you understand what you need to do at that point? You can keep yourself healthy. I mean, you get the lab work done and stay on top of it.
You've got the drugs there. You've got access to the drugs. You know how to inject. You know what it does. What else is people going to do?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's not good. It's not good. And even when you do get a doctor that will listen, they generally, not always, but generally will make you jump through hoops.
Okay.
And they'll start you on gel, and then they'll do a few months on gel, and then they retest, and then eventually they might look at putting you on injections.
Okay. Now, that part sounds pretty similar to here. They do a lot of the gels, the creams, and... You know, you gotta keep coming back. A lot of guys, I think they get it in their head. They're like, "Hey, I'm gonna get a script," and they don't realize that means that you're gonna have to be off. And you know, getting your blood work done on a very regular basis, it might take you 6 months before you could actually start cycling again if you wanted to do that. That's like,
yeah,
it's a commitment, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's just ridiculous that the people have to jump through so many hoops when they've got an obvious medical issue. What annoys me more is you'll get those that will come in and they'll have a test level of 10, 11 or 12 ml, but they'll be heavily symptomatic. And the GPs are like, well, your test levels are fine, so here's some antidepressants, piss off.
Oh, jeez.
And it's like, whoa, hang on a minute, guys. Let's have a look at his free test first. Because if his free test is tanked, then he's going to feel like that. He is going to be symptomatic, and he is going to have problems.
Yeah.
But they don't. It's because you're in range, you're depressed, piss off, it's some antibiotics. And that seems to be the drug of the day over here these days is antidepressants.
Oh, you go, antidepressants.
But then that is very much general practice medicine, isn't it? Treat the symptoms, not the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, there was talk, and I have an old school friend who works for an NHS think tank. And basically, they develop theories and ideas that they proposal to the NHS for how they manage. And they were looking at, this is the example he gave me. He says, if an old man comes to the doctors three times a year every winter with chest infections, and we treat it, and then he comes back again with more, and we treat it. And the actual cause is the fact that his house is damp and drafty and not well insulated. Then it actually saves the NHS money to go and insulate his house.
Really?
Because that's the cause.
Yeah, yeah.
So you insulate his house, you make his house warm and watertight and dry, and therefore he doesn't get chest infections anymore. So he's not at the GP three times every winter.
Huh.
And that was the way they were looking at starting to try and go, was to be a lot more treat the root causes instead of where they are now, which is very much treat the symptoms.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I mean, unfortunately, as it stands both here and I believe over there, when it comes to low testosterone, the only current treatment available is to treat the symptoms, which is hormone replacement.
Yeah.
A PCT is not recognized by, as far as I'm aware, any medical community, even though there is growing evidence that it works.
Yeah, I don't think there is. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I've heard of I've heard of doctors over here prescribing Clomid for people with low test, you know, a Clomid and HCG protocol to kind of increase fertility. I've seen those things, but I haven't seen doctors necessarily trying to, you know, maybe I have. Maybe I have over here seen doctors trying to run Clomid and HCG to get them to turn back on, actually.
I've seen a few hospitals over here run HCG protocols.
Okay.
I've yet to see one run what would be a traditional PCT.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that either.
And it's, I mean, a certain level of the, I was on an Australian talk show some months ago, and there was one of their high-end endocrinologists on the talk show, and she basically blatantly turned around and said, PCT doesn't work, it's a myth. Hmm. And I was like, well, there's several, probably hundreds of thousands of people in the world that might argue with you on that one.
Right.
Because there are plenty of people that do use PCT very, very successfully. It doesn't work for everybody, that's true, but there are those that use it and use it very successfully.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Dave, let's take a quick break, and then we've got some questions. I put a thread up on social media, but we got that a little late. But we do have a bunch of other questions too. We've got one on MK677. We've got a guy who's got some skin issues, and we've got some other stuff. So let's take a break, and we'll be right back, guys.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, guys? I wanted to take this break and give some credit where credit is due. He didn't ask me to do this commercial, but I am doing it. And that's because I'm grateful. So thank you, Dave Crossland. Thank you for your contribution here at Advices Radio. And thank you for your contribution to bodybuilding as a whole. Guys, you can check out more of Dave over at his website. It's crosslands.org.uk. That's crosslands.org.uk. Crosslands Harm Reduction Service specializes in providing concise, informative, and effective drug training to a wide range of professionals, as well as advising individual users. And be sure to check out his YouTube page. It's at UC The Freak. That's the letter U, the letter C, The Freak. So you can't miss him there. The guy's all over YouTube. All right, guys, we will get back to the program in just a moment. Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is VJ Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout-outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and we've got some questions here. So for the future, I'm going to have to get this thread out sooner. I mean, I kind of dropped the ball, as in I put the thread up too late, and we didn't have a chance to get people to think. Yes, exactly.
Working with amateurs, I'm not used to these standards, you know, Scott. I expect higher.
Well, you shall get better next time. You shall see some improvements in that. Gives me something to work toward. But I do have a bunch of questions here, and some of these are from the Advices Radio board. These are questions that people had asked that I think we could really help with. And the first one here is from a guy who says he has some skin problems. He says, I need some advice on something I've had to deal with for a long time now. Here's a little history and general information about myself. 25 years old, 183 pounds, approximately 16% body fat. He's been lifting for 6 years now. At 17, he lost approximately 110 pounds. He dropped to about 150 pounds total was his body weight, 15% body fat, from 260 pounds. It's a huge amount of weight. I did that in a very short time, about 10 months, without exercises. It was a very bad diet, and you only know that if you eat less, you lose weight. So it sounds like he just starved himself. So yeah, and that's what he says. So basically, I starved myself. One of the biggest issues I have had to deal with is loose skin. I had surgery when I was 19 to remove some excess skin around my belly. But after 5 years of diet and exercise, not a great diet, but I still young, and he was still young and he liked to drink at the time. He said, I brought my body weight down to where it is now. I guess my question is there any products out there that will help me to tighten my skin? I just started a cycle this week and I'm running it for 16 weeks, Sustanon 250 at 500 milligrams a week. My thought was to cut for 4 weeks to help shed some fat before the Sustanon kicked in, and then do 12 weeks of a lean bulk, maybe put on some more muscle that would help to make my skin look tighter. But is there another substance or lifestyle change that could help me with the skin? He said, I would like to implement this as soon as possible. Please let me know your thoughts about it. And he also says, sorry for the long post.
First thing is, Sustanon kicks in after 24, well, even less, 12 hours. So it doesn't take 4 weeks.
It takes what? Why do people say that then? Why do people say it takes 4 weeks?
Because they don't understand the pharmacology. They take it based on how they feel. Blood plasma levels of hormone, even on testosterone, will be elevated within 12 to 24 hours. Sustanon particularly is a blend. So it has fast actors, medium and slow acting tests in there. So even more so with something like Sustanon, levels will peak early and stay peaked quite quickly. So it doesn't take 4 weeks for it to kick in. The impact would be quite soon. We may be talking a slightly longer period of time to physically see results, because obviously the body has to break down tissue, repair tissue and grow, etc. But the actual influence of the hormones is very, very quick.
All right.
With regards to loose skin, it is a difficult one. There isn't really a chemical as such that's going to shrink skin. Hemorrhoid cream will tighten skin to some degree. How long lasting that effect is debatable. Zinc will improve skin elasticity,
really?
Which may help to some degree.
I didn't know that.
But unfortunately, his options are more surgery or get a lot bigger muscularly so the skin is stretched over a larger, greater surface area. But beyond that, he is still young, so there may be some tightening over time as well. Looking after his skin, keeping his skin healthy, keeping it fully hydrated, having a good nutritional profile, supplementing with, you know, vitamin E and things like that will all help his skin condition. The healthier he keeps his skin, the more likely it is to start to tighten, but it could be several years, and at the end of the day, it's very much how long is a piece of string. It's down to the individual as to how effective that will be. If he gets bigger muscularly, then obviously he will help stretch the skin over a larger frame, so that will help. But beyond that, there isn't really a great deal that can be done, I'm afraid.
I think age, you know, these are just life factors. I think that the age plays a role. Like how long were you fat for too? You know, if you were overweight for, you know, 20 years, then the chance of that skin shrinking up, that's going to be a lot less, right?
Also the speed of weight rate at which you lost the fat as well.
Yeah.
Because the skin he's suddenly very loose and void, where if it was more progressive, the skin has some time to adapt as the weight loss goes on.
True.
So there's several factors that play into this.
I think I've even seen it in just, you know, I'll say normal people, people that weren't very overweight. When, you know, when you're dieting down, you take an area like the stomach or, you know, into like the glutes, low back, that when somebody is dieting down for a contest and they get super, super lean, those are areas like the low back for a lot of people is an area that you don't get rid of all that fat unless you're dieting for a show. And once you get that fat off, it can take extra time. It can take extra time. And it usually does tighten up. But the younger you are, you know, the more probably natural hormones, chemicals you have in your body, and the more elasticity there is in your skin, the more likely that is going to be to tighten up. I can think of one guy in particular that I've worked with who he literally had like drapes of skin that would hang over his waistband. A couple guys, actually. And that over time, keeping their body fat down. And that was the key, because they, in the off season, you start eating and all those fat cells want to swell back up. You know, that's only going to, you know, go work against you if you fill those fat cells back up and stretch that skin back out. But over time, by keeping those areas leaner, two guys I can think of offhand had a lot of success being able to get that under control. And both of these guys are under 30. So they get that going for them.
Skin subtlety plays a big factor in obviously how well you will come back from this. Yeah. But it is unfortunately not an easy thing to completely fix. And it wasn't clear from what you were saying as to how long he's had the weight loss. How long has he been down?
I'm not totally sure. He said he did it in a 10-month period, and I'm guessing it's been under a year then, you know. So,
but what I mean is, how long since that 10-month period has he?
And that I don't know. But it sounded, just based off of what he was saying, it sounded recent. Like maybe he lost the weight, and
he probably needs to give it some time then and see how his body reacts. But definitely increasing his zinc and making sure he is eating healthy and he is fully hydrated to ensure the health of his skin is going to help maximize the tightening of the skin post his diet.
I hear those operations removing skin can be very, you know, they can be very complicated. They're not an easy surgery. It can be dangerous when you open up that much of the surface area.
I mean, an aponectomy is basically where they slash all the way around and lift the skin.
Whew.
And it's they're very reluctant to do it for the simple reason as it runs an extremely high risk of infection.
Hmm.
It's not something they will avoid it at all costs if they can, because of that issue with infection and post-operation infection. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, the infection does get old. It's a bigger mess after than it was before when the loose skin was there. But at the same time, I also understand someone who's lost a great deal of weight, how difficult it can be to deal with the loose skin.
Yeah.
Because they put all this effort into losing weight and they should be at a stage where they can be proud of how they look, and they can't be because they've got these folds of skin hanging.
Yeah.
So I understand the drive and how difficult it can be for somebody who's, you know, really worked hard, lost a huge amount of weight, to then almost be punished for it with loose skin.
You hear growth hormone is good for skin elasticity. Do you think this would help at all, or you think it would just be so minimal?
I honestly aren't sure. I definitely wasn't wanting to go down the realm of recommending drug use really with this situation. But
yeah. But I think people are looking for that though. You know what I mean? That's the questions they're going to ask. They're like, well, what can I take? You know?
Yeah, I mean, GH will generally, obviously, increase skin cell rejuvenation since skin cells turn over. But the other thing you've got to remember with GH is that long-term use of GH will suppress your thyroid, and you've also got risks of type 2 diabetes. So you need to manage your blood glucose levels if you're going to run GH long-term. And this is where we start getting complex. Because someone who's got a large amount of excessive skin, if GH is going to be successful, it's still going to be a 12-month plus commitment.
Yeah.
It isn't going to be something that you take and wake up a week later and, oh, it's all gone.
Right, right.
Because the body's actually got to replace that skin, physically replace it, regrow it, you know. So that takes time.
We had a somewhat related question that was posted on our thread. This is going back to the fact that he said he was using Sustadon. And this guy had posted on your thread, he said, his name is Leon. Leon says, Sustadon has many esters. Is it worth it? And I'm not sure what he means by is it worth it. But, you know, we mentioned that there are many esters. Is it? Let me ask you this way, Dave. Is there any difference between a multi-ester test versus a test enanthate or, you know, a cypionate?
Well, the difference is in the drop-off points of the various esters. So with an enanthate, you get a very rapid climb in blood plasma levels within the first day. And then you get a steady decline in line with its half-life. So that is generally what happens with all single esters. It's they all pretty much will peak very much within the first 24, 36 hours. Now, when you run, obviously, something like test base, well, it peaks within literally matters of tens of minutes, and it's gone within sort of 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
And when you look at propionate, it again peaks very, very rapidly within a matter of hours, half a day, and then starts to decline over the following 36 hours. So it's the drop-off point. The idea of Sustadon was that because the esters all degrade at different rates, it allowed for a more stable bloodline.
Yeah.
There is evidence to support that you actually don't want your bloods overly stable. When the body has a very stable hormone level, it will then start to clear that hormone at a faster rate. This effectively lowers your hormone blood levels by about 50%. And you'll see a lot of guys that will test, guys that are blast crews have been on a very long time, and they'll be on a cruise, and they'll say, well, I'm on a cruise, I'm doing a genuine cruise, 200, 250 a fortnight, and I've just tested my bloods, and it's low. And it's like, yeah, so the gear must be funky. Well, no, actually, it might possibly be you that's clearing the esters a lot faster than you would normally do it.
Interesting.
So is there much difference? Well, test. So I wouldn't say there's a massive difference. I mean, I haven't used Sustadon for absolute donkey's years. And when I went on prescription TRT, I went on Sustadon, and I remembered as soon as I shot it why I hadn't used it for donkey years.
Why?
Hurts like fuck.
I was going to wait for you to finish and tell you the first shot of test I ever took, Dave, was an amp of Sustadon, farm grade Sustadon, and I put it in my glute, and I swear to God, it felt like I got hit by a baseball bat for the next 2 weeks. I thought I was going to die.
I'm incredibly sensitive to test prop.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fast acting test esters always hurt me a lot.
Huh. And you never got used to that, because I think you get used to it after a while, but you didn't, huh?
Never. Not with prop.
Okay.
If I was running prop, I used to do 1/4 mil shots and spread them out.
Oh, jeez.
Because I couldn't handle, about 1/2 mil was the max, and that would be hit and miss as to how much that swelled up.
Mm. Wow.
So as in actual hormone effect, there isn't really that much of a difference. Scientifically, yes, but in real world practicality, you won't see much of a change. It's very much down to how you feel and how you get on with it. And that's very much the deciding factor. You know, some people prefer cypionate because it's a different acid to enanthate, and therefore they don't get the same amount of pip as they do off cypionate as they would off enanthate. A lot of people feel cypionate is just a little bit smoother.
Yeah.
But it's really, the difference is more in how you feel on the various esters rather than the chemical reactions within you. Because there is, in real world practicalities, if you had a guy on 250 milligrams of SUST a week and you had a guy on 250 milligrams of ENTH a week, you're not going to see a massive difference in how their physiques develop based on their drug protocols.
Yeah. Hey, I got a question I want to ask personally. Now you know we mentioned earlier you were using some fairly high doses in the past. I remember watching Under Construction and seeing just like all these vials, and I remember seeing all the empty vials too. How did you? And this is something I've come up with against. You know, I ran a couple of pretty high cycles getting ready for a contest, and I had access to whatever I wanted. And I went decently high. How did you spread all this stuff out? Because I feel like there's only, you mentioned that you were doing, when you did probe, that you were using like a quarter mil and spreading that around. How did you spread out like massive amounts of oil? Because that gets tricky.
Well, you've got delts, you've got biceps, you've got two heads in your triceps, you've got calves, you've got quads, you've got glutes, you've got lats, you've got pecs.
And you're hitting all those, huh?
If I need to.
Okay. It takes some commitment, man. It really does.
If you need to. I used to shoot calves quite regularly. A lot of people really struggle with that, and it can be very painful, but it didn't bother me. Lats, I wouldn't recommend that. That is quite painful.
Lats, I've done lats. I like lats, actually. They work okay for me.
Oh, well, lucky you. They didn't for me. Bloody hell.
I never tried a calf, though. That scares me.
I used to run the two heads in my biceps, two of my tricep heads, and my medial delt. So there's five shots in one arm.
Okay.
So, and a lot of reasons why I didn't use glutes was I always had problems when I injected glutes. Really? Always.
Huh.
And I also found it a very difficult shot to do because they were just at the sides where moving around to get it in was not easy.
That makes sense.
But yeah, no, just split them up. Simple as that. And obviously mix the esters that I know are problematic with an ester that I know isn't, for argument's sake. So if I had to take a test prop, I'd put it in with Deca.
Okay.
And that just made it a little bit more tolerable.
It's a pro tip right there. I'm going to move on here.
We got
another question. This one's about MK677. He says, hi, I'm 58 years old, 227 pounds. Says he's trained for 20 years on and off. On for the past 6 years, does anyone have a good MK677 protocol? I would like to try some over the winter. I know it's hard to put on size at my age. Any help would be appreciated.
Right. The first thing is, why would someone take MK677? Sorry. For size.
You get that. I'm gonna go with me here. Let's see. You're gonna add water weight. You're gonna be able to then you're gonna increase your IGF levels, right?
That impact on growth is not even gonna be worth mentioning. You'll get more IGF spike out of test.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Anabolics, the spike IGF. But, okay, the level IGF has to come up to promote growth is huge. It works with anabolics in combination with the other impacts of anabolic, you know, nitrogen retention, increased protein assimilation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's been shown that growth hormone protocols for muscular growth don't really work.
Really?
There was studies, older studies, that showed hyperplasia. And then when these have been continued and looked into further, they found that that does not continue. And they've also found that growth actually impedes athletic performance. It actually lowers your ability in the gym. Hmm. But what growth hormone will do is hold water and push it intracellular. So you're fuller, you look bigger. However, growth will aid in sleep and it will aid in recovery. So it has a secondary action that will promote growth, but it hasn't got a primary action that promotes growth, despite the name of growth hormone. Hmm. MK677 is effectively a GHS. It's a growth hormone secretome. It works for the ghrelin access, and it's very commonly used because it does make you hungry. It will improve sleep, and it'll have those impacts of running a low dose of growth hormone, say 1 to 2 IU every other day. Hmm. But its anabolic action isn't even really mentionable. So its growth impact is going to be more along the lines of improved recovery than anything else. The downside with NK is, in a lot of people, it will screw your blood glucose levels. Hmm. It makes you insulin resistant quite quickly. A lot quicker than the GHRPs do.
Really? And that's going to make it harder for you to gain size then, right?
Yes. Okay. And it's also going to make a promotion of you that you would most likely, post-usage, retain fat.
Interesting.
It won't override the action of growth hormone and fat loss while you're using, but post-usage, you could have some resistance issues. Hmm. The thing is, it's labeled a SARM, selective androgen receptor modulator, and it's not. It's a peptidic compound, and it's not an androgen receptor modulator, so it shouldn't be labeled as a SARM. But then there are other stuff like carnitine that's labeled as a SARM, and it's not. It doesn't have an anabolic action. So I would say that for an older gentleman, MK can improve vitality, improve youthfulness, improve quality of sleep, and improve recovery, and in that would see some benefits in growth. But it's not going to cause a direct growth action through it being growth hormone. Hmm. The days and years of, yeah, growth hormone is going to make you massive, take as much as you can afford, you're going to grow, long gone.
Yeah. That's interesting. And you know, that's kind of what I've seen firsthand in my own life. I feel like if anything, I maybe could stay a little bit leaner using growth while I was adding food, but that's where it began and end, really.
Yeah. I mean, I have nothing against growth hormone, and I think it's a very good health product. And generally I'd look at running 1 to 2 IUs of Pharma Growth every other day as a background supportive input. I don't see much point in much more.
Okay, why every other day? Because there's been a lot of talk about this every other day stuff lately with GH. Used to be, you know, every day. What's the reasoning behind this?
Because of the half-life. Exogenous GH does shut your natural GH down.
Okay.
So unless you're putting it in at the right time, specifically during the day to mimic your natural pulses, then you're going to have a negative effect from changing that criteria. Mm. So by going every other day, it gives you natural levels a day to run on their own in between.
Okay.
So it sort of prevents a growth hormone shutdown, so to speak. Mm. The GHRPs work well because obviously they stim your own natural growth. And it's quite common that people will do GH one day, run the GHRPs the next day, then back to GH the day after.
Okay.
And do it that way. Hmm. The main use I've ever always sort of implemented MK is really for its appetite boosting properties. Hmm. But if I run MK, I run berberine.
If when you have or had in the past run MK, how long do you think it's effective for before you want to take a break from it?
I normally stick it to, I tend to put it in the back half of cycles. Mm. So if a cycle was 12 or even 16 weeks long, I would bring it in at 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
Because it's about that point when I'm starting to find I'm having problems with sleep or I'm starting to lose my appetite a little bit.
I found it's great for my sleep.
And that's generally at a time when I'm starting to see the drug toxicity start to build in the system. Mm. And it just takes the edge off things.
Okay.
So the MK just gives the appetite a little bit of kick and allows the eating to be linear and continue to progress with the cycle that you're doing. And just helps with a little bit more sleep as your body's getting a little bit more stressed at the back end of doing a big hard push on a bulk.
Mm. Okay. That makes total sense. I just sent you over a message on Facebook, and this was somebody's lab results. They had some thyroid work done, and the question is he has high TSH, and he doesn't understand what's going on here. Can you make heads or tails of what's going on with his lab work here?
Hang on. That's, glasses. See if I can even see.
I'm looking at this right now, and it says TSH.
Oh, TSH is 5.04.
Yeah.
Well, that generally means that he... Well, it actually explains. Wasn't it not the bomb? Generally, if TSH is high, it means that thyroid is low.
Really?
Because TSH is thyroid-stimulating hormone.
Okay.
And T4 is at the bottom end of range. And we don't have a T3. So basically, his body's producing high levels of thyroid stimulating hormone in order to try and get his thyroid levels up.
Hmm.
So that would indicate a potential thyroid problem or the start of a thyroid problem.
So his T4 is low, and that's the inactive thyroid, which he would need that to convert into T3. So we could probably assume that's going to, if this is low, that's probably low too, right?
Potentially T3 is low, and T3 could be quite low, and it could be the low T3 that's signaling the increase of TSH in order. He would be better getting a thyroid test that does T3, T4, and redundant T3 and T4, and that'll give a lot better picture of what's going on within his thyroid.
Okay.
So, if TSH is high, it means your body is struggling and trying to produce more thyroid.
I see. So it's raising that up to try to give you ample supply to produce more is what you're saying.
TSH triggers production of T4. T4 then converts to T3.
Okay.
So low T3 will trigger more TSH, or low T4 will trigger more TSH. And it's noted that his T4 is low end of range as it is.
Mm.
If he has any issues in converting T4 to T3, a condition known as Hashimoto's, then that would mean his T4 could potentially be very low, and that's what's triggering his TSH to pump like fuck.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions we've got here, Dave.
My wife bought me a lovely cup of tea and a piece of cake.
Beautiful. Oh. What kind of cake?
Like a lemony type slice thing.
That sounds a cup of tea and a slice of lemon cake. That sounds very British to me.
It was quite small. It was a very small square. It was only about 1.5 inches square.
Oh, that's too British for me. A little more American. 6-7 inches across. That'd be my style.
Big slice bar.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, would I
need to come to America and try pie?
Yes, you do.
I want to go on a food cruise.
Food cruise. I think you're going to in about a week here when you go on your vacation.
No, I want to come over. I want to hire a motorhome. And then I want to try and visit every restaurant ever mentioned in Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Wow. Can I come along and film that for YouTube or something?
Yeah.
That'd be
lots
fun.
Of me eating shit.
That'd be good. We call it pie and stuff. It'll be the end of the show.
The culinary tour of America.
So I posted this picture of you, because we talked about this before, you and Rich Piana together. You do have him a little out angled here, but I think you're still substantially bigger than he was.
Don't give me secrets away. I think Rich was about 310 at the time, 300 ish.
Okay.
Maybe slightly under, and I was 360, 370.
Yeah.
Rich is obviously notably leaner than me. I mean, it's, you know, you'd be an idiot not to see that.
He was super lean.
He was a lot leaner than me.
I wonder if he did that protocol, his expo protocol that he talked about before this picture.
It's insulin and growth loading.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, full of water and glycogen.
Yeah.
He definitely knew how to manipulate an audience. He was a very clever man in that department.
Yeah, I remember seeing him at the Arnold Classics the last couple of years before he had passed. His line was like literally the length of the building.
When he was still with Mutant and he first sort of came out, his lines were astronomical.
Yeah.
Absolutely astronomical. I mean, they were the longest by at least double of any of the pros that turned up at Body Power in the UK.
No kidding.
Yeah, massive. And the strange thing was it seemed to dwindle when he went to 5%. He still had huge lines, but they didn't seem quite as big.
Interesting. Huh.
And he didn't own 5%, did he? He sold it, and he was just a paid figurehead for the last few years.
Okay. I didn't totally follow him a lot, so I wasn't sure how long it went.
I didn't know that for a while, to be fair, but obviously 5% is still running, but you can see the difference now. I mean, and there's no disrespect to the athletes that are with 5% in any way, shape, or form, but it was definitely Rich that was the attraction.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question. I saw there's a guy at my gym. He got a 5% tattoo. The entire back of his hand says 5% on it.
Oh, there's loads of those running around in the UK.
Whew. I've also seen the animal tattoos, the animal pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do that. You got a fair deal of tattoos, Dave. You going to get any more?
Yeah. I sort of like the idea of getting more, but I don't like the idea of sitting there and someone sticking a needle into me for several hours.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of art, something we haven't talked about, we'll have to get to this in one of our future episodes. I want to talk to you about your drawing because I looked at your pictures again the other day, the ones you have posted on Facebook. Man, you're incredible at very realistic drawing. You're really good at it. How long have you been doing that for?
On and off all my life, but I took it seriously for a couple of years and then sort of drifted away from it. And nowadays I just don't have the time.
Hmm.
Talking of tattoos though, I am considering another one, but it's a particular gentleman I want to do it. And unfortunately he's not responding to any of my messages.
Is he out there in the UK?
No, he's in France.
Really?
Parisian, yes. And he does, 3D tattoos.
Oh, really?
I'm trying to find his name now.
Where would you get this next one? Because you've already got a good amount of them.
I'd probably go to my left arm because I've got nothing from my elbow down on my left arm. I've got tribal across my shoulders into my chest, and then it turns into a big dragon on my back, which is a tribal dragon.
Right on.
And then that runs down around my hips. And then on my right arm, I've had a lot of fill work done in between the tribals, sort of Samoan type patterns and that sort of thing.
I like that kind of stuff.
Just purely decorative. But then I had a Viking longboat head on my forearm.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
And there was a few other bit of Viking bits I wanted.
It's very fitting. That fits your style, your look.
There was the Berserker clan, which were Vikings that were believed to, in spirit anyway, if not physically, transform into wild animals in battle.
I've heard of that.
And they were quite well known for taking drugs and various other things and then going absolutely bonkers and charging into battle like lunatics, pretending to be bears and lions and various other bits and bats.
They probably thought they were at the time.
And my wife got me a belt buckle made, which is the Berserker Clan belt buckle with the Berserker Clan logo on it and some ruins from there. sort of grips and stuff. And I fancied having that somewhere.
Nice.
But then I stumbled across... I mean, a lot of people say tattoos should tell a story, and I suppose they should in a way, but they're also decorative, and I don't actually see anything wrong with somebody having a tattoo just as a piece of art, you know, just as a piece of decoration.
I'm with you. That makes sense to me. I mean, a story is nice, but I think sometimes people stretch it a little far too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just because it's a story doesn't make it acceptable to have a shit tattoo either.
Right, right. You know what I wonder? Yeah. If you walked into this guy in France and you're like, hey, can you put this, let's say you wanted a tattoo on to fill up your forearm. And then I came in and I asked him for the same tattoo to fill up my forearm. I wonder if he would charge you more because your forearm is going to take a substantial amount more ink. It'd be a bigger picture is what I'm saying.
Well, it should do if all things are fair, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah. You'd pay a lot more for like a bicep tattoo than the next guy.
I've always paid by the hour anyway, so...
Oh, yeah.
He's generally just gone, how much is it an hour, right? I'll book you for so many hours, and we just keep going until it's done.
That's a lot of hours on you.
all my work's always been done by the same guy, and he's a proper old-school tattooist.
Right on.
And very much into the history of tattooing. He's been out to New Zealand and had traditional tattoos done. He's been in Africa and had traditional tattoos done. You know, where they sit there with a wooden stick and a bit of ink on the end and hammer it into your body.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's had all that sort of stuff done and very big on the history of tattooing and everything behind it and the reasoning behind it. And also an extremely good tattooist as well. The only downside is with him, you've got to try and book him about a year before you need him.
Oh, wow.
Which is an absolute nightmare.
No kidding.
Unless you go on the cancellation list, and then it's just a case of he'll ring you in the morning, so I've got a slot today, come on down.
Nice.
Which obviously isn't very practical for a lot of the time. But, yeah, he's a good old tattooist, but I've got a lot of time for him.
All right. Well, I think we got a lot of stuff to talk to about in the future here. And next time, I'm going to put that thread out at least a couple days in advance. So, guys, look for that. I'll post that up. I'm sure that Dave will share it. We will have a good question thread out with plenty advance notice. We'll collect up more questions. I think we covered a lot of good stuff here, but I definitely want to hear directly from the listeners, and we'll get those out for the very next episode. Sound like a plan to you, Dave?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
All right. Anything else we should mention before we take off here?
One thing. It was the PCA and the UK BFF finals last weekend
in
the UK.
How did that go?
Seemed to go quite well. I believe the UKBF attendances were not particularly high. I know the super heavy class finals only had two competitors in it.
Are you kidding?
No, they've struggled. There's some good people in the UKBFF, but there are some assholes, and there's some people in that federation that are downright corrupt. And then there's some people in that federation that are, I think, just very misguided or very have a very twisted view of what the Fed should do. And then there was the PCA, which was a sellout. In fact, what they were having to do was people were queuing at the door, and as people left, they were reselling tickets to get people in because it was that busy. So it was one in, one out. But there is just one thing I'd like to say off the back of that.
Yeah.
When you stand on stage, you invite a panel of 7 to 9 people to give their opinion on how you look.
Yeah.
Don't fucking bitch about it when you don't like the opinion they give.
That's a good point. Was there some complaining?
Always is.
Yeah.
Always is. Yeah, always. We have another in the world of powerlifting. We had this weekend and the weekend before our first, well, technically our second and third, but generally regarded as our first 1,000 kilo raw total.
No kidding.
Now, I believe that Glenn Ross did it about 10 years ago. Irish guy. Nicknamed the Big Daddy. Or the Daddy. And then last weekend, weekend before last, should I say, Sam Parker did it. I can't remember his individual list, but I know he got a 420 squat. Hmm. And then another lad whose name escapes me, but I believe this lad's only about 19 or 21 or something, did it this following weekend. So that was quite epic within the world of powerlifting.
No kidding. Do you ever go to the events?
I tend not to go to many events full stop anymore, but I'm good mates with Andy Bolton, who was the first guy to deadlift over 1,000 pounds.
Okay.
I'm quite good friends with Emma James, who runs one of the federations, and I've just got a few friends involved in a few of the feds. So I sort of don't follow anything, but I will take an interest in a friend who's doing something.
Absolutely. That makes sense.
I mean, I know Sam, he's a pain in the fucking ass and he winds me up something chronic, but credit where credit's due. You know what I mean? That was an outstanding achievement.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But he does drive me insane with some of the shit he puts online.
what did you say his total was?
His total was 1,000, straight 1,000.
Wow.
And then the other guy, I think, was just over 1,000.
So 1,000 kilograms. I'm going to look here. That's 2,204 pounds.
Yeah, so that's the total. So you've got...
That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, man. That is so much freaking weight.
Oh, there was a guy in the States, is it Big Dogs or Three Dogs? I can't remember what the event's called, but who just posted 1,100.
Really?
Kilo total. So that's 2,400.
That blows my mind. You know, I've never been like the strongest guy in the gym. I'm better, you know, when I get some. So, and it's not the way I've trained. You know, I've always trained with at least 6 reps, basically. I mean, sometimes I've dropped down lower. I'll do doubles, and I have done singles. But I mean, that's not the way I've trained. It blows my mind talking to people that's been their ambition, is to do the most they can possibly do with one rep. It's amazing what the human body can do. It just blows me away.
Yeah, it is. And you know, credit goes out to these athletes that are quite literally pushing the boundaries of raw strength.
Sure.
There was a few big comps on, actually. There was the Andy Bolton Deadlift Challenge on, which is a charity deadlift comp. That was a really good show, I believe. And then obviously we had the two big finals on, which, you know, I mean, there always will be those that come away from no show moaning like bugger.
Right.
But it's ridiculous. You know, if you stand in front of somebody in your underpants and ask them to judge how you look, you can't moan if they give you an answer you don't like.
Yeah, yeah. What can you do? You can try to improve that and do better next time, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there was another one that 2 weeks before was the Two Bros, which is basically the NPC's version over here.
Okay.
So the Two Bros feed straight into the IFBB Pro League.
Oh, really?
In the same way as the NPC does over in the States.
Hmm.
The UK BFF is affiliated with the IFBB, which is nothing to do with the IFBB Pro. It got really complex.
Okay.
So the IFBB and the IFBB Pro split last year.
Yeah.
The IFBB were unhappy with the NPC's judging of a show, kicked off. So they turned around and went, well, stuff you, be on your bike. It was a long time coming. There was a lot of stuff in the background that had been going on way before that. So the IFBB split and set up the IFBB Pro Elite. But the problem is, though they've got the International Qualifying Federation, they haven't got an established pro league. So they don't have the Olympia. They don't have any of the big pro shows. So the IFBB Pro still exists as an independent now, and the NPC is now run by somebody else, and it's still independent. So they started Two Bros Pro, which was the equivalent of the NPC in the UK, as a qualifying shows into the IFBB Pro League. So they're big shows because they're automatic pro cards.
Yeah.
Now, previous to that, we had one pro card issued a year.
Yeah, that's what it's so different over there than over here.
Yeah. Whereas now we're getting a lot more. Okay. Some people are arguing that it's watered down, but really it's just more in line with what's already happening in America. Because as you know, there's several pros, several people turn pro every year. Very few actually do anything in the pro ranks.
That's true. Yeah.
So we've now got the equipment over here. And there was a lot of people moaning about that because they thought they should have won or they should have done this or they should have done that. And it's like, well, if you don't fit the criteria of a class, then it doesn't matter how good your physique is, you're not going to win.
Right.
You know, you've got to present what the judges want for that federation. And that might be slightly different to a previous federation. And it astounds me that people get so upset and so wound up about it. I appreciate they've put a lot of effort in it, but have some class and humility when you don't win. Come on.
Yeah.
You can't win everything. If you ask people to judge you, then you have to be respectful of the decision of what those judges are.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I think that's a good reminder. There's no question about that. And it's a good note to go out on, man. So I hope you have a great rest of your week. I hope everybody out there listening is having a good week and training hard, eating all their rice every 90 minutes, 2 cups. About 10. I've been thinking about that a lot, man. It blows me away.
And I'm still waiting for my relationship question.
Ah, that's right. We are going to make that happen next episode. That's going to be part of the thread. I'm going to demand relationship questions. And guys, we'll hear what Dave has to say. So for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally, and we will see you soon.
Take care. Goodbye.